Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's podcast has to do with an article. I think many of you saw it. It's pretty dramatic. It's in the New York Times, and it caught everybody by, kind of threw us for a loop, because those of us who take vitamins and supplements were pretty dismayed when we saw this article prominently displayed on the op-ed page of the august, respected New York Times. And the rather garish headline was, "Don't Take Your Vitamins." The author, Dr. Paul Offit, O-F-F-I-T, and more about him later. But I thought I'd take some time to break down this article for you, because I think it's important that we discuss it. This has set the vitamin world in a tizzy. And here's a sample of the reaction that I've gotten. I've gotten a lot of comments on Facebook saying, "Dr. Hoffman, what do you think about this? This is a pretty dramatic study." They refer to it as a study, but all it is an op-ed, an offered article that has had placement on the editorial page of the New York Times, thus guaranteeing it many eyeballs. But it's not a study. It's just a commentary by a guy who has a particular perspective on vitamins. And I think I'm going to put that in context for you in just a moment. But here's a typical reaction from one of my patients. "Hi, Dr. Hoffman. There was an interesting article in the New York Times yesterday about vitamins, and particularly focused on A, E, and C. It is pretty clear that beyond their recommended doses, they can be harmful. What is your opinion on this subject? I am thinking about foregoing my multi and rethinking my whole protocol." Signed, whatever the name of the patient is. And so let's take a look at the article in the New York Times by Paul Offit. It starts by snarking on Katy Perry. She's a popular singer. If you've got a kid or a tween or a teen, you probably know who Katy Perry is. Otherwise, you'll have no idea who Katy Perry is. But she's pretty well known. She's got 37 million followers on Twitter. And Dr. Paul Offit, in the introduction to this article, disparages her for posting a snapshot of herself holding up three large bags of pills, suggesting that she's a ditz and that how can we possibly listen to the advice of dumb celebrities. He writes in this article, here's his central proposition, quote, "Nutrition experts argue that people need only the recommended daily allowance, the amount of vitamins found in a routine diet. Vitamin manufacturers argue that a regular diet doesn't contain enough vitamins and that more is better. Most people assume that, at the very least, excessive vitamins can't do any harm. It turns out, however, that scientists have known for years that large quantities of supplemental vitamins can be quite harmful indeed." And he seeks to marshal evidence that that's the case. But let's take a time out to identify for you, who is Dr. Paul Offit? How did he get to write an op-ed on the centrally placed in the New York Times? Well, according to Wikipedia, if you look him up, he is, quote, "an American pediatrician specializing in infectious diseases and an expert on vaccines, immunology, and virology. He's the co-inventor of a rotavirus vaccine that has been credited with saving hundreds of lives every day." And that doesn't sound so much like a Wikipedia article. It sounds a little more like a press release. But yes, diarrhea caused by rotavirus can be a serious problem. And he has invented a vaccine that helps to protect children from rotavirus. As an interesting aside, I was at a party the other day. It was a graduation party. And the nephew of the gal who was graduating, her brother's young son, was crying the whole time. He was just he was inconsolable. And this was kind of weird, because I've seen pictures of him, you know, calm and bubbly and cooing on Facebook. And I thought, what the heck is wrong with this kid? And the mom comes up to me and said, "Ever since he got his rotavirus vaccine, he's had terrible colic, serious, I guess, gastrointestinal problems, although he's too young to articulate it, and he's been real unhappy." So, you know, rotavirus vaccine. This is a guy who is a vaccine advocate, and he's made a lot of money on his vaccine, by some estimates, $29 million or more, because he owns rights to this vaccine, which is being administered tens of millions of doses, perhaps hundreds of millions of doses worldwide. So it's quite a financial bonanza for Dr. Paul Offit. I wish him well. I don't say this enviously. But this positions himself to be a prominent voice within the world of medicine because he's a vaccine inventor. But he's also a committed and avowed foe of alternative medicine. He's always challenging its legitimacy whenever he can. He even wrote a book entitled Alternative Medicine, Sense and Nonsense. And it came across a lecture announcement for his book tour for that book, Alternative Medicine, Sense and Nonsense. He wrote the following, quote, "Americans love alternative medicine and they're paying a high price for that devotion. From regular visits to acupuncturists, chiropractors, and naturopaths to the daily ingesting of homeopathic remedies, Chinese herbs, and mega vitamins, the use of alternative therapies has become a $34 billion a year business." Clearly, he does not like that. Although the vaccine business is by far a bigger business. 50% of Americans use some form of alternative medicine, with 10% using it on their children. Celebrities routinely hawk their benefits, but does any of it really work, he writes. And, of course, in his opinion, no. He has even called for the abolition of the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine, the NCCAM, which is the division of the National Institutes of Health that's entrusted with investigating the effectiveness of natural medicines. He calls it a big waste of taxpayers' money to even go there. He says, don't even go there because, you know, all this stuff is bunk anyway. Why waste taxpayers' money to evaluate stuff that, you know, can't possibly work? However, he wrote that before the results of the recent TACT study were in. TACT stands for Trial to Assess Chelation Therapy. That's a study which actually has shown that chelation therapy actually does work to prevent cardiovascular disease and keep people with heart attacks from needing to go back to the hospital or even dying. So, but he says we shouldn't even investigate that stuff because the whole field of complementary alternative medicine is too bogus. He is also a vociferous opponent of what he terms vaccine denialists, people who deny that vaccines are efficacious or who point out to harms in vaccines. He repeatedly asserts that vaccines are harmless. In fact, he has said, he's been widely quoted as saying that, quote, babies can tolerate 10,000 vaccines at once. And that's a direct shot at people who say we ought to, at the very least, pace our vaccines, that kids who get multiple vaccines on the same day are more likely to experience immune system meltdown. He also attacks routinely and jousts with people who believe that vaccines can contribute to autism in susceptible children, and he even wrote a book about it entitled, quote, Autism's False Prophets, Bad Science, Risky Medicine, and the Search for a Cure. So this is not a guy who is very friendly to the world of complementary alternative medicine, for sure. In fact, some have accused him of a conflict of interest because he's made millions of dollars from royalties associated with the rotavirus vaccine. And this is not just quacky people who have attacked him. An investigative report by CBS News reporter Cheryl Atkinson reveals strong ties between the vaccine industry and the medical community, as well as public health officials like Dr. Offit, who is responsible for regulating the vaccine industry. So, there is a conflict of interest when you're a vaccine inventor and proponent, and you're also given great power and authority over which vaccines should be part of public health recommendations for kids to get. By means of direct payments as well as educational grants, the vaccine industry, like the pharmaceutical industry, exerts pervasive influence on the world of medicine. So Offit, however, has now turned his attention to vitamins and supplements, and his editorial in the New York Times is an auspicious debut, great product placement for an upcoming book entitled get this, do you believe in magic, the sense and nonsense of alternative medicine? I guess with do you believe in magic, with apologies to the Lovin' Spoonful. He stole that title. Previews of the book promise that it will reveal, and I'm quoting here, how alternative medicine, an unregulated industry under no legal obligation to prove its claims or admit its risks, can actually be harmful to our health. Even though some popular therapies are remarkably helpful due to the placebo response, many of them are ineffective, expensive, and even deadly. So I think pretty much you're getting the sense that Offit has a very, very relentless agenda against all manner of complementary and alternative medicine, not just vitamins and supplements. And that ought to put his objectivity in question. So when you invite somebody to do a guest op-ed piece in the New York Times, you got to kind of know where he's coming from. This guy hasn't met a vitamin or supplement or alternative therapy that he likes. And, you know, contrast that with me. I mean, I'm a proponent of vitamins and supplements. I mean, clearly. And, you know, full disclosure, I sell vitamins and supplements to my patients. So, you know, I am involved in the vitamin and supplement industry. That's my profession. But I'm also, I think, a ravenous consumer of scientific information, which I try to digest objectively and help to break it down in a way so that all this conflicting data can become more intelligible to you consumers out there. So, you know, and when there's a negative study about vitamins and supplements, I talk about it, and I try to at least shed some light on it. Most of these studies, as you've seen in the past, if you've listened to my health talk broadcasts, there are flaws and downsides with some of the studies. So, and here's the other thing. I mean, here's a guy who is an academic physician. He's an expert in the field of virology and vaccinology. Great. I mean, I accord him full respect with regard to his field. But he's venturing far afield when he decides to take on the world of supplements and vitamins. He is not nutritionally trained, although he may believe he's a quick study and he's been able to review some of the evidence. I, on the other hand, administered supplements to thousands of patients, supplements of all kinds over the past decades, many of whom report excellent results to this day. And I've seen very few downsides. I would be concerned if there was a supplement that was causing harm. And there have been, you know, very isolated cases where supplements have had potential negative effects. But I've seen very few people injured or harmed by supplements. By contrast, I see major havoc when it comes to the medications, the approved medications that people take, both over-the-counter and prescription medications. And in addition to witnessing people taking supplements, I personally take lots of supplements. I talked about that in our last newsletter. By the way, you can get our newsletter by subscribing via radio program at AOL.com. Just go to radio, just email us at radioprogram@AOL.com. It's not a website, it's a mailbox. So send an email to radioprogram@AOL.com and you'll get on the subscription list. I shared with our readers the vast number of supplements that I personally take. And I consider myself sort of an ongoing science fair project to evaluate their safety and effectiveness. If there had been a downside, I'm not aware of it. There are very few individuals who, at the age of 60, can participate in triathlons. In fact, even win their age divisions in Olympic distance triathlons, do very aggressive exercise. I could do 12 consecutive chin-ups, 3 sets of 40 push-ups. If there had been a downside from taking all these vitamins over many, many years, surely I would embody it. And yet, I'm in perfectly good health on no medications whatsoever. And so the downsides of vitamins and supplements, I mean, he points to some theoretical arguments, which I think are worth discussing. One is that antioxidants might be harmful. I think that's his central proposition. And surely there is there has to be a balance between antioxidants and prooxidants. Oxygen itself is an oxidant. And we know that some of the pathways in the body rely on oxidation. And some people who are vitamin opponents point to the possibility that too many antioxidants might thwart the oxidative mechanisms and sort of put a blanket on them and thus prevent the body from doing some of its essential tasks. Theoretical argument, fine. But there's little evidence of that in people who are vitamin takers. What he does do in this article is he cherry picks from some studies that we've gone over on our radio program on Health Talk and also via our newsletter in the past that suggest that supplements may have a downside. And one in particular that he relies upon is the Iowa Women's Study that shows an overall downside from taking vitamins and supplements. Now, there are many excellent critiques of that study, and I suggest that you go find them. But here are the major points. The study was based on recall. So participants were asked to recall the supplements that they took many years before, sometimes as much as 5 or 10 years before. So who's going to know precisely what... I mean, I don't even remember sometimes what I had for breakfast the day before yesterday. You know, so asking people about the supplements they took and having them fill out a questionnaire is a pretty unreliable way of assessing supplement use. Also, the majority of the problems seen with vitamins in that study were due to inappropriate dosing of iron and copper, particularly iron, that women don't need after menopause. Taking excess iron may build up iron stores, and iron can act as a prooxidant, certainly not an antioxidant. So nutrients that don't necessarily, that people don't necessarily need should not be routinely supplemented. But a lot of people have this false idea that, you know, if you don't have enough, get up and go, take some iron, and you'll feel better. Well, some people will, and some people will actually do themselves some harm. All right. In addition, we're talking about the Iowa Women's Study, some of the downsides. The quality of the supplements used was unclear. And, you know, when you do studies in Iowa, middle America, and especially since the study was done quite a few years ago, and then it asked people to look back on the supplements that they took 5 or 10 years before, we're probably talking about pretty poor quality supplements. We have no idea what these people were taking. They say they were taking a multi, or they say they were taking, you know, an antioxidant. But we have no idea what really the quality of these supplements was, and probably it's a far cry from the supplements that you or I would consider adequate or optimal. Discount multis taken without supervision really can't be equated with targeted supplementation dispensed under guidance from a nutritional professional who's going to say, you know, it seems like this is what you really need, or for your particular circumstance, don't bother taking that because it might have a downside. In addition, in this particular study, many of the conscientious vitamin takers, you know, you look at a population and you say, well, let's look back on these people. They take vitamins, but they're identical to the other people who don't take vitamins. Well, they're not, because people who take vitamins are more conscientious. They're more health conscious. And in this particular, whether you'd say, okay, they take vitamins, it might show that people take vitamins end up being healthier. Well, they're more health conscious anyway, so that they might be healthier. But in this case, it turned out that a high percentage of these vitamin takers were also sold on the idea that hormone replacement therapy with synthetic estrogen, Prempro or Premarin, was going to be a healthy thing to do, because they were more upscale consumers. They were taking vitamins, they were taking estrogen, they were thinking, all this stuff is good for me. Well, taking estrogen, the artificial form of estrogen, has been shown in the past to somewhat increase the risk of heart attacks and cardiac events. So that could have accounted for the finding of the slight increase in heart risk, not the vitamins, but the estrogen that the vitamin takers were taking. So there are many, you know, when you look at a study and you read a headline, unfortunately, the average person, I mean, all you guys, whatever you do, you're very, very adept at. I'm sure some of the things that you do would just have my head spinning in your area of professional endeavor. You know, your teachers, your engineers, your attorneys, your professors. But it's actually very hard for the average, even well-educated, intelligent layperson, much less even a doctor, to break down a study and look at the potential downsides and potential and critique it. And plus it takes time. And even doctors and the vast majority of average citizens are very busy. They can't look at studies and say, well, what's wrong with the study? These people are saying, well, vitamins are bad, but let's look at the study. Let's drill down. Let's look at it, take it apart paragraph by paragraph. In another oft-cited study that is marshaled to demonstrate the danger of antioxidant supplements, they looked at Finnish smokers. And they thought, well, these folks, they're at high risk of cancer because we know that smoking causes lung cancer. So they said, let's look at Finnish smokers, a bunch of middle-aged men who were Finnish smokers. Now, apparently, unhealthy folks in Finland really tend to smoke a lot, and in addition, they drink a lot. So they gave these Finnish smokers beta-carotene, and they thought, that's going to help prevent lung cancer because beta-carotene, that comes from fresh fruits and vegetables, and that's going to be a cancer-reducing or chemoprotective nutrient. Well, unexpectedly, they were found to have an increased risk of lung cancer. So what happened there? Well, many of them were alcoholics, and it's thought that they're impaired liver function. You know, when you take a vitamin A or a beta-carotene and your liver function is impaired, you can build up unsafe levels of vitamin A. And combined with the effects of the cigarettes, it could have been that the cigarettes, all those free radicals in the cigarettes, fried the beta-carotene and converted it into a cancer-promoting pro-oxidant. It's tricky here. So the deal is beta-carotene is a very, very narrow-spectrum supplement. I haven't used beta-carotene alone for a long time. I used mixed carotenoids for my patients because I think they more correctly embody the protective effects of fresh fruits and vegetables, which is what clearly has a preventive effect against cancer. And, okay, well, let's take a look at vitamin E while we're at it, because there are a lot of studies now that are questioning the effectiveness of vitamin E, although many studies show that vitamin E is very effective for protecting the brain, for protecting the eyes. So the studies kind of, you know, there are studies pro and con. And I don't care what subject it is in science or medicine. There are always going to be studies pro and con. You know, the subject could be exercise or it could be coffee use, whatever. There are going to be subjects coming down on both sides of the issue. But when it comes to vitamin E, this is something that Paul Offit really attacks because he says the studies are showing it's harmful or dangerous or not efficacious. But virtually all these studies were performed using cheap, poor-quality D-alpha tocopherol, which is a very narrow-spectrum vitamin E, something I abandoned by the early 1990s because I now use mixed tocopherols rich in gamma tocopherol, which is the active agent. And that is much more efficacious, much better for chemo prevention of cancer and for reducing the risk of cardiovascular disease. So, you know, I think that in sum, the bottom line is Paul Offit has a preconceived opinion. He cherry-picks studies to buttress it. Many of these studies are flawed. And the only thing that's really a shame is that this article, via its prominent placement in the op-ed pages of the New York Times, it legitimizes an indiscriminate, I'll use the term poisoning of the well for hundreds of millions of Americans who really continue to derive enormous benefits from supplements, but now they introduce this element of skepticism and distrust. These are people who aren't doing well despite very aggressive treatment with conventional medicine. They have all the best and the brightest doctors, and they have the best therapy, drugs, surgery that modern medicine can provide, and yet it's falling short of providing them with optimal wellness and freedom from disease. So vitamin supplements, natural therapies, I believe will help to close that gap. And with due respect to Dr. Offit's contributions to vaccine science, I think he's really overreaching when he appoints himself as the true arbiter of the legitimacy of supplementation and alternative medicine. I think that that's a title that he does not deserve. Okay. I don't know about you, but after that rather depressing story, I'm in the mood for something a little bit lighter. So what could be more refreshing than a story about medical intrigue and malfeasance, kind of like a soap opera. Headline: oncologist accused of poisoning lover's coffee. This is from the New York Daily News. Dr. Ana Maria Gonzalez Angulo allegedly poisoned her lover by putting ethylene glycol in his coffee. Of interest is that her lover is also her co-worker, Dr. George Blumenschein. Dr. Argulo is a breast cancer specialist at the University of Texas MD Anderson Center in Houston. That's a very prestigious medical institution. So she's obviously a very talented and intelligent young woman. However, she, like all mortals, even though she's a very, very qualified medical doctor, is subject to the passions that govern relationships. So she was charged with aggravated assault after she reportedly tried to poison her lover by slipping him ethylene glycol in his coffee. This is what happened. According to an affidavit obtained by the Houston Chronicle, Dr. Ana Maria Gonzalez Angulo had a, quote, casual sexual relationship with her colleague, Dr. George Blumenschein, a lung, head, neck cancer specialist. This is not uncommon in hospitals, just like, all the TV shows. On January 27th, Gonzalez Angulo reportedly served Blumenschein coffee that tasted sweet, something he questioned her about because he drinks his coffee black. The 42-year-old woman said she had added Splenda to it. Said, go on and keep drinking it. In reality, Dr. Gonzalo Sangulo had mixed in ethylene glycol, a.k.a. antifreeze, which is a sweet-tasting toxic substance. And Blumenschein drank two sweet-tasting cups of coffee. That's quite a lot, laced with antifreeze. 4 hours later, his speech started slurring. He experienced poor balance, as well as a loss of fine motor skills. And he got pretty sick. He was taken to the hospital 16 hours after drinking the coffee. He was found to have cardiopulmonary complications, central nervous system depression, and renal failure, and required dialysis treatments. It's pretty heavy duty. And, this is a, parenthetically, dogs routinely die when people, haphazardly leave out antifreeze. I don't know why you would just leave a pan of antifreeze sitting around, because sure enough, dog's going to trot up to it and say, this tastes good, and, consume enough to do him herself or herself in. But passions run high in the hospital. I can remember a celebrated incident in one of the hospitals that I trained in. It was really the talk of the hospital, where one of the top surgeons in the hospital, in I guess it was a lover's quarrel or a fit of jealous rage, he attacked one of his physician assistants, a woman, with a hammer. Badly mauled her with a hammer. She had head injuries, but fortunately survived. Here was a guy. One day he was riding high as one of the top surgeons in the hospital, and the next day he was, taken away in handcuffs because he had battered this physician assistant and left her bleeding in one of the on-call rooms. So, it's like intelligent people, but they are subject to the passions and foibles of ordinary mortals. Okay, I think you're going to like this. What if I told you that there was something out there, whether it's a supplement or medication, doesn't matter, that could reduce heart disease risk by 22% for each 200 milligrams you took per day? So if you took 200 milligrams If you took 100 milligrams, you get an 11% lower risk. If you took 200 milligrams, 22% lower risk. If you took 400 milligrams, you would have a 44% lower risk. If you took 600 milligrams, you'd have a 66% lower risk. Well, if that was a medication, you better believe that would be a blockbuster medication because it outperforms any medication that's currently on the market. Statins, blood pressure medications, beta blockers, you name it, aspirin, all the different blood thinners they have out there. Nothing works this good. But of course, as you might expect, this is a natural supplement. The supplement in question is magnesium. All right, this is published in May in one of my favorite magazines, the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, America's most authoritative medical journal. It is not just one study, but it's a study of many studies. It adds evidence, they say, to the protective effect for magnesium against the risk of cardiovascular disease, including fatal heart attacks. Harvard researchers looked at 16 studies that examined the relationship between levels of magnesium or dietary intake of magnesium in association with cardiovascular disease or narrowing of the arteries or fatal heart attacks, cardiac deaths. And the studies included over 300,000 men and women. That's pretty big. What they found was that if they looked at blood levels of magnesium, for each slight increase, each 0.2 increase, and this is, you know, if you measure magnesium, generally the level they want to see is 2, 2.4. So for each increase of 0.2, there was a 30% lower risk of cardiovascular disease. So people walking around with low magnesium, that's a big problem. They're at risk for heart attacks. That's why I check everyone for magnesium in my office using a very sensitive test at the Hoffman Center. Additionally, okay, well, that's looking at a blood test. Now, looking at the dietary intake, which can include supplements, but also includes magnesium from foods. There are certain foods that are rich in magnesium, particularly green leafy vegetables. There was a 22% lower risk of ischemic heart disease. That's blockage of the coronary arteries leading to heart attack or pain. For every 200 milligrams of elemental magnesium taken in per day. So 400 would provide you with a 44% lower risk and so on. All right. So what's going on? How does magnesium protect you from cardiovascular disease? Well, there are several ways. One is that it provides improvements in vascular tone and endothelial function. Now, what does that mean? Well, you hear the expression hardening of the arteries. Well, your arteries don't necessarily get hard. You know, it's not like you can take out arteries on an autopsy and you hit them with a hammer and they'll shatter, you know, like crystal. The arteries become harder. They're less flexible. They are less responsive to exercise demands or even changes in position. And so the blood doesn't circulate to essential areas as well. Or alternatively, your blood pressure stays high. It gets high and it stays high because the blood vessels don't properly relax. That has to do with vascular tone. Vascular means the tiny muscles that line the inside of the blood vessels, and the endothelial function is the lining cells within the blood vessels that sense changes in pressure and respond to the demand for additional nutrients and oxygen to your essential organs. So magnesium is great for that. It really is important for vascular tone. Also, they point to reductions in platelet aggregation. The platelets are the sticky things that float around in your blood vessels so that when you shave, you ladies shave your legs too, so that's a universal experience. When you nick yourself, it should stop. The bleeding should stop. And platelet aggregation is influenced by magnesium. Magnesium tends to reduce the stickiness of platelets, which is good. It has a blood thinning effect. Also, magnesium can impact HDL. It can actually help to raise heart protective HDL. It helps glucose homeostasis. It helps your insulin work better so that you don't have to have such high levels of insulin or high levels of blood sugar. It provides a decreased risk of stroke. That has been demonstrated as well. So magnesium works in a variety of ways. One way this article doesn't talk about how magnesium is helpful is magnesium is a wonderful anti-arrhythmic agent. And in my experience, there are a variety of magnesiums that are available. For patients who are constipated, magnesium citrate is great, although it's not that well absorbed. It will kind of run through your intestinal tract, and it will provide you with a laxative effect, but it's a cheap form of magnesium, along with magnesium oxide, a bit laxative, but not that well absorbed. Next on the list, magnesium glycinate is pretty well absorbed, but doesn't cause as much of a laxative effect. My favorite these days is something called jigsaw magnesium, which is magnesium malate in a very absorbable form that really rarely causes any kind of diarrhea except in the most susceptible patients. It doesn't have much of a laxative effect. So if you're looking for a laxative effect, you need magnesium citrate. If you're looking for true absorption, consider more premium forms of magnesium like jigsaw magnesium. If it's for heart health, if it's for something like atrial fibrillation, magnesium taurate is great because it teams magnesium with L-taurine. L-taurine has an anti-arrhythmic effect, and that's a very, very important function of magnesium, that it stabilizes the rhythm of the heart. It may slow and regularize heart rhythm, reduce the risk of atrial fibrillation, reduce the risk of more dangerous ventricular fibrillation, which is actually responsible for what we call sudden death when somebody has to undergo a code, you know, with chest compressions and the whole nine yards, the defibrillator and all that. That's often an arrhythmia, a fatal arrhythmia, and magnesium tends to reduce the risk of fatal arrhythmias. So a very, very important nutrient all around, very important for energy, and virtually involved in the functioning, the energy metabolism of each and every cell in your body. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks very much for joining us for this edition of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. We'll have lots more podcasts to come. In the meantime, check out our website at drhoffman.com. You can subscribe to our newsletter by emailing us to radioprogram@aol.com. And don't forget to friend me on Facebook, because we also post a lot of really useful articles on Facebook and generally have a lot of fun. It's a great place to exchange ideas and see what everybody's been up to. Thanks for joining us. Until our next podcast, Dr. Ronald Hoffman signing off.